Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today, I wanted to do something I don't think I've done before, or maybe done once before on this podcast, which is to do a bit of a summary slash discussion slash review on a recent research paper that some of you may find particularly interesting. So the paper was a publication that took place in September last year, so September 2025. And the title of the paper is Heightened Innate Immunity May Trigger Chronic Inflammation, Fatigue, and Post-Exertional Malaise in ME/CFS. So very often with clients, with people on social media, I'm often getting asked about this mystery of post-exertional malaise. Some people have reflected to me that they didn't even know what they were experiencing had a name. They knew that they were maybe experiencing increased fatigue or increased symptoms after exertion, but they didn't actually know that that was a thing, and that what they were experiencing had a name, which is post-exertional malaise. And even though some people do experience post-exertional malaise, I think it can still feel very distressing and also very frustrating. And most of that sort of distress and frustration comes from not really understanding what's happening. So I thought that this paper was particularly interesting. It is very, very, very scientific. There's lots of acronyms and big words and mechanisms, and it's very, very complex for the layperson to understand, which is why I wanted to summarize it. And I will just be giving a very, very brief summary to keep things simple for you. But I wanted to summarize the paper, talk a little bit about the research, how it was done, and share some of the findings, and then the conclusions and recommendations, which you may find insightful in your own fatigue recovery journey. So I hope you'll enjoy going through this with me. I will link the actual publication with the show notes. It is a free article that you can read if you so choose. But I would just say that it was very, very heavy going to read. So you may just want to listen to the podcast and be satisfied with that. As always, if you haven't already had a chance to do so, please leave a review for me. I would really appreciate it if you could leave a 5-star rating for me on Spotify or on iTunes, and just help improve the podcast ratings. It helps other people find the podcast. If there has been something that you've learned here which has been useful, insightful, and you think that it would help somebody else, when you rate the podcast, it does help other people to find it and get the help and support that could really make a difference in the trajectory of their illness, or even just help collapse the timeline of their illness, help them recover faster because they had access to the right information. So if you haven't already done that, I'd love to invite you to do that now. Otherwise, we will discuss this very, very scientific paper together. And, you know, I've got a little summary here in my notes in front of me, which I will be referring to, and also with a little bit of help from ChatGPT. But I will do my best to kind of communicate things in a way that will be useful for you. So let's dive in. Well, first of all, let's just talk about what essentially the research was about. So the research was really about wanting to understand what might be causing the fatigue and crashes that people with ME/CFS experience, especially after, you know, light activity or exercise, because we know that you don't even have to be formally exercising to experience post-exertional malaise. You can experience post-exertional malaise just from mild activities of daily living. And so what they basically did was they had 57 people who had diagnosed ME/CFS, and then they had 47 case controls. So the case controls are what they refer to as the healthy cohort, which are the people that they compare the results against. And so from an exercise perspective, they did various scales. They used various sort of more subjective ratings. And then they also did blood tests as well. And so in terms of the questionnaire ratings, they did three assessments before they exercised, on the day of exercise, 24 hours, and then post 48 hours post-exercise. And they had each subject of the study perform some exercise on an upright ergo cycle. So basically, I'm assuming that an upright ergo cycle is like a bike of some sort where you are sitting upright. And basically, the participants were encouraged to exercise to their maximal capacity. However, they would stop the test if the individual requested that they didn't want to go any further or do any more. Or they were also monitoring them quite closely, all sorts of physiological variables as they did the test. So if they had an abnormal electrocardiographic finding, then they would stop the test as well. And so the study ultimately found, spoiler alert, that there were markers linked with the immune system, inflammation, the gut barrier, and other immune cell activity that was altered after exercise, more so in the individuals who had ME/CFS than the healthy cohort. So basically suggesting that there is some sort of altering in the immune response, and as the title of the paper suggests, the innate immune system after exercise in these particular individuals, which could be potentially driving an increase in symptoms. So that really is the be all and end all of the paper, but I'd like to just go through a few things that they found as a brief summary. So one of the things is that the immune system was more activated. People with ME/CFS seem to have higher signals of immune activity and inflammation even before exercise, let alone after. So there's some suggestion here that the body may be stuck in some sort of alerted state, and this could contribute to the symptoms. So when we think of, and this is just my interpretation, this wasn't published in the paper, but when we think of this idea of an alerted state, immediately what comes to mind for me is cell danger response and some sort of stuck physiology of the nervous system. So we often talk about the autonomic nervous system being stuck on or stuck off. There's a stuck state, which essentially prevents the cells from moving through their natural cycles of self-protection, but then into recovery, repair, and regeneration. So to a degree, I mean, if you've been following the podcast, if you've been following my work, if you're familiar with the nervous system, if you're familiar with the cell danger response, this is telling us what we kind of already know. But it's kind of nice to have it reflected back in recent research. Another thing that the study found was that fatigue links to exercise response. So after exercise, people with ME/CFS had changes in certain blood chemicals that were linked to how tired they felt, i.e. an increase in some of these inflammatory or immune markers were correlating with symptoms. And that merely helps to explain post-exertional malaise and why when people, you know, crash and then they have these dips and they have these increased in symptoms after exertion, it's not just some sort of imaginary made up thing that is happening, but they've actually found, looking at like particular markers throughout the study, that there were changes. And I can't remember if all of the changes, I don't think necessarily all of the changes correlated with an increase in symptoms, but there were specific ones that definitely did correlate. And so, again, there were so many different things that they measured, and it would be really, really challenging to kind of go through all the details of the study without overwhelming you or boring you to death in terms of some of the things that they assessed. But I think the main kind of take-home message is that there's there's something happening here. There's some sort of immune and inflammatory response which is correlating with symptoms. And what they also found is that some molecules that changed after exercise were linked with the brain and linked with energy. So they found that several substances in the blood that relate to brain function, energy metabolism, and fatigue levels were different in ME/CFS patients than in healthy people. And these changes may help to explain why some people experience more brain fog or lack of energy after exercise. So ultimately what this means, very simply, is that in ME/CFS, the immune system may be more active than it should be, even without an ongoing infection. And with someone, or shall I say, when someone with ME/CFS does activity, the body reacts in very strong ways, which might cause a crash or worsening of symptoms afterwards. I mean, we know that already. These biological changes could be part of why rest doesn't necessarily restore energy in the same way it does for healthy people. If you are inflamed, if your immune system is active, rest is supportive. Obviously, it's supportive, but we have to allow the body to restore like optimal levels of immune activity or optimal levels of inflammation so that we can ultimately feel more well again. And this is why it can take several days, in some cases even several weeks after an overexertion, to return to some sort of baseline. So that was something that I just wanted to go through with you. And as I said, you can have a look at the full paper. I will link it in. I also had ChatGPT create a nice little summary diagram. So I will pop that into the blog and then maybe you'll be able to see it by clicking through to my blog if you're watching this in one of the players using the show notes. But the other thing that they did in this study, which wasn't necessarily relating to exercise, was that they basically took blood from the participants and then they put some sort of infection, sort of a microbial agent, shall we call it. There were various microbial agents which they used, some bacteria, some yeast, that they put into the blood samples, and then to see how the cells responded or how the body responded with that sort of challenge. And what they did find was that the people with ME/CFS had a much greater immune response to these particular agents versus the healthy control group. And they also talked about some research which has been done previously that I thought was sounded quite interesting, and it's something I might look into these specific papers in future. But basically, they referred to two recent publications which support the role of the dysregulation of the innate immune system, which is the innate immune system is a non-specific immune system. It's like one of the first lines of defense against infection. And basically just saying there may be a dysregulation of this immune system in people with ME/CFS. And they use this term, which is called trained immunity, that maybe the pathology of ME/CFS is a result of this trained immunity. And basically in trained immunity, infection with one pathogen results in a reduced threshold, triggering inflammation from other pathogens. And this is, I'll continue and then I'll break it down a little bit more. And they basically suggested that this model or this idea of trained immunity is the results that they found through this particular paper, where they had the blood samples and they added a microbial agent to the blood samples and they saw a heightened response. They suggested that this observation they saw in this study was in line with this suggestion of trained immunity. And so the idea being is that people with ME/CFS have a lower threshold for immune activation because of this trained immunity, maybe from like initial infectious agent. And so if I was to, again, this is not, I haven't done my own research. This is just me using my brain, using what I see in clinical practice, the stories that people tell me, the patterns that we see, the way that people respond to things. If I was to give you my take on this, is often we see that people who experience these conditions, they have a life load and an infectious load. So for example, somebody could get mold or have a mold exposure in a home that they're living in, and they have a fair amount of resilience. They don't even get that sick. But then maybe you've got someone who's had a history of developmental trauma. They've been living in fight or flight most of their life. They've never really had an embodied sense of safety. They then get a stomach bug when they're traveling through South America when they're 18 years old. And then they recover, but then something else happens and something else happens. And it's this idea that every single time the system is going into more and more of this sort of inflammatory response, and then the inflammatory response eventually becomes overwhelming to the body. And we know that, or at least what I see in practice, is that we have to support all of it. I do believe, you know, the nervous system component is an invaluable component in supporting the health of our cells. And we know that because of the connection between the nervous system and the cell danger response. But additionally, we also maybe need to do other things here, because once the body has been in this chronic low-grade inflammatory state or having these chronic inflammations to various infections, the mitochondria start to become more dysfunctional or damaged. There's more oxidative stress, which is causing inflammation in the body. And all of this we need to, you know, take on board to support the body to physically repair. Whether that is initially obviously focusing on those five stabilizing factors that I always talk about, blood sugar balance, pacing, sleep and circadian rhythms, and the nervous system, and then managing inflammation in the body, they are actually all connected. And or then adding in, you know, extra specific support to support the gut, to support the mitochondria, to reduce toxic load. And that ultimately is what helps people get well and improve their quality of life. So my conclusions here is it is pretty exciting to see people doing this research. Not necessarily because it's groundbreaking in terms of helping us find answers faster. I would love it if, you know, we could do research that would help us find answers faster, help people to get better quicker with less suffering. But due to the complexity of the nature of this condition, I don't know if we ever are going to see any quick fixes, maybe for a few people, but certainly not population-wide. But it is validating. I think that's probably one of the biggest things you could take away from this research, is that it's kind of telling us what we already know, but in a way it's helpful to see, especially for those people who've been gaslit, who've been told it's all in their head, that there's nothing wrong with them. You know, this is a great conversation starter when working with medical professionals to see if there's further support that could be helpful given these proposed mechanisms. And the research does actually conclude with some suggestions. So there's a couple of medications which they mention. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, so I don't tend to work with medications. I don't recommend or prescribe medications, but my clients are on medications, and you know, I do work with people taking some of these things. So there is some research to suggest that metformin could be helpful. I've worked with a few clients taking metformin for their chronic fatigue. Can't say I've really seen it be helpful, but they suggested that potentially metformin could be helpful. And rapamycin could be, I guess, another area to do a little bit more research around. They also mention gut barrier support, particularly in this study. What they noticed is that there were some immune changes in the gut, which ultimately influenced the gut membrane barrier. So what that can often mean for people with chronic fatigue is if your gut is what is often referred to as leaky, and you have unhealthy or unhelpful microbes in your gut, if you've got dysbiosis in your gut, then toxins and dysbiotic material, shall we say, can pass through into the bloodstream, and that can be very activating for the immune system. So supporting the gut is something that we want to do. We want to support that gut barrier for that particular mechanism. But I would say majority of my clients are working on some sort of digestive support. And again, this is not telling us things we don't already know, but it's definitely validating the things that we know are helping. So gut barrier support could be really helpful. L-carnitine taken as a supplement to support the mitochondria. L-carnitine helps to shuttle fatty acids into the mitochondria so they can be used as energy. And this research suggested that there was potentially a breakdown in that mechanism. So essentially the energy can't get into the mitochondria, or the fatty acids can't get into the mitochondria and be used to make fuel. So a lot of my clients do take L-carnitine. I usually recommend this based off of testing, but it is something that you could always try under supervision of your healthcare professional, of course. Some people say it's amazing. Some people don't notice a difference. So I usually would always just say, well, you know, try and see. And then just the interesting thing, this was done in the ex vivo research. So ex vivo research is basically when they took the blood out of the people and then they put the infectious agents into the blood, and then they looked at what immune responses happened. And they found that when there were higher levels of estrogen, this actually had a little bit of a protective effect against the immune activity. Whereas women who were older than the age of 45, who maybe had lower levels of estrogen, had a slightly different response. And even though it maybe potentially wasn't clinically significant, it was statistically significant, it was maybe a little bit lower. So they suggested that estrogen therapy could potentially be beneficial for people that need it. Interestingly, and this is just a personal observation, is that I know I've always felt better when I'm at times in my cycle when I have more estrogen in my system. And when my estrogen is at its lowest point, days 1, 2, and 3 plus of my cycle, I tend to feel not as good as I feel at other times in my cycle. And that was especially noticeable recently. I just got back from South Africa about 3 weeks ago, and I got back from South Africa, and the next day my period started. So I was in a low estrogen place after 24 hours of international travel. And then I don't know why I did this to myself, but I also did like a cold plunge when it was -2 degrees outside. So very, very cold, which was also a significant adjustment from coming from the summer in South Africa to the winter in England, the overnight travel, the cold plunge in the sea. And then I felt, I was really much more tired than normal. And I think it was this combination of that low estrogen creating a little bit less resilience in my system, and then the additional stresses that I placed on top, which under other circumstances I probably would have been fine to manage. So that is just a little bit of an anecdote to bring some of that information regarding estrogen to the forefront of your mind and think about how it might apply to you, even if you are under the age of 45, as per this study. You may still find that you don't feel as good in those lower estrogen times of your cycle. So then it's, you know, when estrogen is lower, we need to modulate what we're doing at that time of the cycle when we don't have that natural protection from estrogen. And this is something I talk about in the cycle syncing episode anyway. So that brings me to the end of this episode. I hope you have enjoyed just learning a little bit about some of the research that is being conducted. As I said already, I don't feel like this research really tells us more than what we already know, but it does help to validate current levels of thinking and also offer some reassurance and direction for things we can do to support ourselves. And maybe also research is always a a game of one study creates more questions which need to be answered, and hopefully from this there will be more and better research to come in the future. So thank you so much for sharing this time with me, and I wish you a wonderful day.